chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm delighted to have Jim Turley on the show today. Jim is the retired chairman and CEO of Ernst & Young. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Jim, I have been looking so forward to this interview with you. Thank you so much for taking the time. We were just talking, and I feel like it's been forever since we've even seen one another. But you and your precious wife, Lynn, Greg and I got to know you guys. I don't know if you remember this, but we got to know you through Stages.
Yes, I remember.
St. Louis, and Lynn and I served on that board together for many years. We've chaired some of the galas and just have always found you guys to be such warm, authentic people. And so you're married to your beautiful wife, Lynn, you have a son, Jay, and then the most important people in your life, I guess, would be your three grandkids.
They are. We're blessed with three grandkids. One of them will be about 5, our grandson, and then granddaughter, who's 2.5 maybe coming on, and then about a 4-month-old new granddaughter as well. And real blessing.
Oh my goodness. You know what Greg always says? I thought I loved my kids with all my heart until Sawyer showed me the other 75%.
Amen. So true.
Well, before we get into everything that you've done, and there's so much to talk about here, I want you to tell me a little bit about how you grew up. Now, I know that you went to university. I know you went to Rice in Houston. Did you grow up in Houston?
No, I grew up here in St. Louis. Yeah, I went to Clayton High School, and my father and mother lived in Clayton for the latter part of, well, their whole life. And my dad actually, when I was in high school, I was living in the house my dad had grown up in. So grandpa and grandma had built the house in Clayton. So it was great. We grew up here and then ended up down at Rice and started with career right out of Rice.
And when you were at Rice, you have a BA and an MA in accounting. So tell me, like, who influenced that? What did your parents do? Did you have siblings that had gone into accounting? How were you influenced as a young person?
No one had gone into accounting, but my father was very active in business here in St. Louis. Turley Martin Company, the real estate company, he helped build that. And grandpa had built Turley Real Estate before that. And then dad took it and built it and merged it with Martin, and just a great organization. So I always sort of knew I wanted to go into business. In high school, I was sort of a math and science guy. And so down at Rice, they thought I was going to be an engineer, but I always knew I didn't want to wear a lab coat. That was sort of what I thought engineers did. Ended up in accounting, and my professors there were great, and I just loved it.
Tell me this. Don't you believe that accounting, having that basis of accounting, is great, though, for any kind of business that you do? I mean, it's important to understand the numbers.
It is. I think that a basic understanding of accounting and a basic understanding of law, you know, are two things that will help you no matter what field you end up going into. And so, look, we have so many people that graduate with accounting degrees and go into accounting, and they can, like you, end up doing anything they want. It's really just a platform that you could take any direction that your heart desires.
Well, you know, and Jim, I'm just thinking about people right now that I know too, that started their careers at EY, like you did, and they get plucked to be CEOs, CFOs, CEOs of other companies. I mean, I can probably name, I don't know, a dozen right now that I know.
It is a great continuing learning process, because when you join a firm like EY or Ernst & Young, and you know the others are all great, you're continually seeing and learning new things with different companies and different industries and different size organizations. These clients see our great men and women, and they say, you know what? I need somebody in this role. Let me get her to do this. And so you're right. There's always a real churn of talent in those firms. And while it's hard to see our great people leave the firms, we know they're going to be successful in another place. And so it's a good virtuous circle, because oftentimes they come back and become clients of ours as well.
Exactly. Yes. I would imagine that that's the case. So, but you did start at EY right out of Rice, and that was in 1977.
I did.
And you have such an amazing story there, and I want to get into that, but I'm assuming that our listeners know about Ernst Young, but if they don't, Ernst Young is a global professional services firm, approximately 300,000 employees, 150 countries now, but such a great company. And I remember one time, Jim, being with you and Lynn in New York, and we were at dinner, and I was asking you, so how many of those countries have you been to, Jim? And I think you have been to almost all of those countries.
I probably, the last 12 or 13 years, I was on the road probably 250 nights a year. So yeah, I didn't get all the countries, but I got a lot of them. And you learn a lot doing that.
Oh my goodness. You learn so much, not even just about the different industries and the different clients there, but the culture of the country. I mean, what an amazing experience. So yeah, I know you became the regional managing partner for the Upper Midwest in 1994. Now you'd started there in 1977. So by 1994, you were already the regional managing partner for the Upper Midwest, then New York in 1998. And then you became the chair and CEO in 2001. And you led the firm until you retired in 2013. But tell us about that journey. How in the world does that happen? How do you go from starting entry level 1977 and then becoming the chair and the CEO of this global organization?
Look, it's about being lucky. It's about being in the right place at the right time. It's about really realizing you're part of a team and, you know, you're doing what you're asked to do. I can remember so many times when I was in the St. Louis office, for example, early in my career, thinking that, am I being disadvantaged because I'm not assigned to the McDonnell Douglases where you had worked? One of our flagship clients at the time was McDonnell Douglas. I was not on that. I was not on Mercantile Bank, another one of the big clients. I was serving some of the middle market and growing companies, not the ones that were getting all the prestige. I'm thinking, is this hurting me? But, you know, that's what I was being asked to do. And so I realized early on that whether it was through sports, whether it's through other things in my youth, we each have roles to fill. And those roles will evolve at different times. And you just focus on the role you're being asked to fill and do it the best of your ability. And good things tend to happen. And so I was asked in 94 as a relatively young partner to lead the practice up in Minneapolis. It was the whole Upper Midwest. And I thought, perfect, I just love this. And then when they asked me to do the same thing in New York, no one from outside New York had ever been asked to lead the whole tri-state New York area. And so I remember some of the Minnesota people saying, you sure you want to do this? And I was very lucky. You got to realize it's always about the team around you. So you do that well, long enough, and good things happen.
Yeah. Let me ask you, did you have mentors or sponsors, and were you telling them, this is the path that I would love to take? If there is an opportunity, I will raise my hand, or were you tapped on the shoulder?
It's a great question. I would have never had the aspiration to be the CEO of the firm, in all candor. I mean, some people probably come up and say, that's what I want to do. I just wanted to be a respected member of the community. And I remember when I was a manager in the firm, they were asking us, where do you want to be in 5 years? And I said, I want to be a respected member of the St. Louis business community. And I think being a partner in the firm would contribute towards that. And it was interesting because, I don't know, it's hard to put in words. It was just, you want to make people around you better. One of the nicest things anyone ever said about me, when I was asked to leave Minneapolis and move to New York, one of the Minnesota partners, who wasn't like a spectacular partner, just a middle-of-the-road partner, said to me, Jim, what you've done better than anyone else I've ever seen is you put us all in roles that we could win in. You put us in roles where we could capitalize on what we were good at and not have to apologize for what we were bad at. When I moved to town, he had been in a particular leadership role that he wasn't suited for. So I'd taken him out of that role and put him in a different role that was just perfect for him. And I'm glad to see that he ultimately, no one likes that when that happens to them. But when they realize it's all about capitalizing on their strengths and then having their strengths contribute to the success of the team and the firm, the office was on fire. We were growing, great profitability, great revenue growth. And we were all celebrating that success, in part because we got everybody in the right jobs. And so we all started pulling in the same direction, and you win. And nothing makes people happier than winning.
That is so true. Well, I just love that, Jim. And you just touched on, I believe, one of the best leadership tenets that you can have. And that is just, it's like you read Donald Clifton's Strength Finders and Marcus Buckingham. You were doing that before they were even on the scene. So that is just so amazing. And because you're right, people want to be successful. Nobody comes into a firm saying, I don't want to succeed. I don't want to be good at my job. Nobody wants that. But if they're put in a spot where those are not their strengths, it's going to be a struggle.
And they know it too. I mean, they know it when they're in the wrong job because they're feeling uncomfortable every day. And they're trying to sort of deflect attention away from the fact that this is not their sweet spot because, look, they want to be successful. And very few people will raise their hand and say, you know, this may not be the job for me because it'll be perceived as a sign of weakness. And so it's just having open, honest, sometimes fierce conversations with people about what their real strengths are and then helping them capitalize on it was really helpful.
That is awesome. Well, I don't want to embarrass you, but I am going to probably embarrass you. Glassdoor is a platform where both former and current employees anonymously review the companies as well as the executives of the company. And in 2013, you were ranked by Glassdoor the fourth highest rated CEO with an approval rating of 96%. That is amazing. And that does not just happen. You know, you've just explained to me something that I believe your employees and your former employees really did recognize in you. You know, that you truly cared about them. I remember there was a period of time where Greg and I were struggling with a few things in our company at Technology Partners. And I had talked to you about it. And, you know, you said, well, Lisa, I'll just come out to the office and chat with you guys.
I remember coming out there.
Jim, we were absolutely blown away.
As I recall, you were thinking about doing some stuff in Dallas at the time, weren't you?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So I am remembering some of the details.
We were considering expanding out of St. Louis, opening up other offices, and you said, well, I'll come sit down with you guys and just give you my thoughts. And I just remember Greg and I were just blown away. We've never forgotten it. So it doesn't surprise me. Because that's just the kind of person that you are. And I know Lynn is the same way. You know, I've got so much more to talk about. I want to talk about boards. I want to talk about your support of diverse businesses, the EY Entrepreneur of the Year. I mean, there's all kinds of things I want to talk about. But we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Jim Turley on the Something Extra podcast. Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over 2 decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Jim Turley. So Jim, we kind of left a little cliffhanger there about your support and EY's support of entrepreneurs. And I had told you the story about you coming out and supporting Greg and I with Technology Partners. But, you know, you guys did this in a much bigger way at EY. I don't know how long the EY Entrepreneur of the Year has been around, but it has. We were fortunate a couple of years to be the finalists for that. So tell us about what that was, why that was important to you guys at EY.
This was a program that actually started in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the Entrepreneur of the Year program. A few of our partners in Milwaukee had realized that the companies that were really generating job growth and innovation in the community were not the largest and the big public companies in town, the ones that got all the press attention, but the entrepreneurs. And so they wanted to develop a program to celebrate entrepreneurs. And they did that. That was well over 30 years ago. Next thing you know, this becomes a national program and then became a global program. And so there have been entrepreneurs celebrated because of the contributions that the men and women are making to their communities and to the lives of their employees. And it's just been a remarkable thing to be part of in seeing how the mind of the entrepreneur is not focused on themselves. It's focused externally on what needs exist in the world and what ideas do they have to actually meet those needs. They've got a risk tolerance that many of us don't have, and they've got a persistence that most of us don't have because most entrepreneurs don't succeed the first time out of the chute. They have to pick themselves up and dust themselves off and go at it again.
Well, I just remember we even had the opportunity, Jim, to go to the national celebration in Palm Springs, and you guys just did it so right. Train was there. I mean, it was just an amazing, but such a prestigious thing to be a part of. But I love that you guys are celebrating that. Like, even for younger people to look at that and go, no, being an entrepreneur is a career path.
It's an absolute career path. And it's something that is important in this country, but it's important in the world. When I met some of these amazing entrepreneurs from around the world, I remember a woman who was purifying and desalinating water in her country. It transformed the entire country by being able to get fresh water. And so this was so neat to meet some of these entrepreneurs from all over the globe.
So, you know, in talking about and also supporting diverse businesses and specifically women and diversity, you received the Crystal Leadership Award for the Women's Business Enterprise Council, WeBank is what we call it, in 2013 for your leadership in influencing women business success. Here is what Pamela Prince Easton, she at that time was the present CEO of WeBank. She said, Jim Turley demonstrates the power of principled leadership in spurring growth among women businesses from emerging entrepreneurs to established suppliers. His support of equal marketplace access and capacity development has resulted in stronger women businesses and in turn, their contributions to a better economy. And I know I was never a part of that program, but you guys even had a program to help women entrepreneurs go to the next level.
We did. It was called Entrepreneurial Winning Women because we recognized that too frequently when women were starting their businesses, they were starting with less capital than their male counterparts. And it was so important to help connect these brilliant women to the capital sources and to each other in ways that could really help spur continued success. But this was really an outgrowth of the cultural transformation that we had gone through at EY. We had really committed ourselves from 2000 on to being the most inclusive leadership culture that we could possibly become around gender, around race, around ethnicity, around the LGBT community, you name it. And it was something that we worked really, really hard on. People viewed me as being a real advocate around inclusion, And I would tell you that I didn't grow up that way. It was sort of an accident that I became an accidental advocate, but then I became an intentional advocate. Accidental because I was asked when I was in Minneapolis leading that business to develop a pilot program for mentorship for our women. And I saw just how important mentorship and sponsorship was. And so since then, it became something that has really driven a lot of my efforts in my life. I was on the board of Catalyst, leading organization, supporting women in business for 12, 13 years, was a chair for four. It's so important for us.
Well, I love it. And I think about that. So that was 2000, 2001. And I think about now, that is the buzz with everybody, DEI, and even belonging.
You're right.
You know, it's also the belonging piece now. And so I thank you guys truly were ahead of your time. I mean, in recognizing this. So I love that. But I want to move into something else now. I want to chat just a little bit about all the board work that you are doing and are continuing to do. You're currently serving on several corporate boards, I think four publicly traded companies and one privately held company. You were recently named, I think in 2021, the chair of Emerson, as well as the chair of the St. Louis Trust Company's board. You're on Citigroup, Northrop Grumman, Precigen, and then a private company, Kohler. And that's the Kohler that is manufacturing bathroom products and stuff, right?
Kitchen and bath. They have other businesses, but kitchen and bath is their key brand, and absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what generation they're in now, but it has to be probably third, at least second or third.
Well, it's about 145-year-old company, and Herb Kohler, who has been the chair for about the last 50 years, is still our chair. And David Kohler, his son, is the CEO. But I think Herb was fourth generation. Dave's probably fifth. I mean, the generation's wrong. It's a 145-year-old company or more.
And that's amazing in and of itself. That's a case study right there, Jim. Because usually by the time third generation comes, most fail, you know, so that's a whole different podcast that we could talk about. But, you know, I can see, though, Jim, why companies would seek you out.
They just wanted an unemployed accountant like me. That's what they were looking for. And so, you know, look, I'm very lucky because with Citigroup, I'm sort of at the center of global finance and Northrop Grumman, right at the center of the aerospace and defense community, which is fascinating. Emerson, as all your St. Louis listeners know, is just a spectacular technology-based company, you know, deep in automation solutions and an array of businesses, just a fabulous company. Precigen's a synthetic biology genetic company, which is early stage, fun. I'm very lucky.
You also have, you know, like I said, the experience and the deep knowledge, you know, they see you as a valuable person to have on their board, not just an unemployed accountant.
And one other that is smaller, but is really kind of a real gem here in town is St. Louis Trust and Family Office, which is a really exceptional group of people that help families manage their affairs and wealth. I'm pleased to be part of that as well. And so I love staying busy, you know. That and charities I'm involved with. You know, if I just sat at home, I wouldn't know what to do.
I know. Well, you know, I told you, you've been retired for 9 years, but you certainly are not retired because you're staying busy. But let me ask you just a few questions about the board work, Jim, because there may be some executives that are listening and they may say, you know what, I would love to be serving on a board. How do you decide? I'm sure that there have also been requests to be on boards that you maybe turned down, but how do you make those decisions?
You know, it's a really good question. I think the important thing is to find a company where they're in a business that you have an interest in. You want to have some trust in the CEO and the leadership of the company. You don't want to go into something with somebody you don't trust. You want to actually view it as an organization where you could contribute to. So there's some things they could learn from you, but also you could learn from them. If these things are all lining up, it's a great way to stay involved and be engaged. It's crucial to go in with the right mindset that a board member's job is to have their nose in, but their fingers out. They're not there as management. They're not there to sort of dive in and try to be management. They're there to ask the right questions and provide counsel. And so provide credible challenge, right questions and advice.
That's good. And organizations are better, you know, when they have a strong board. I mean, they are.
No question.
You brought up something really interesting. You said, like, with this board work, it's not just about you contributing, but it's also you learn from serving on these boards. So tell us just a few of the things that you feel like you've learned by serving on the boards that you have.
I thought I knew a fair amount about sort of the global financial services business from my old life. But being on the board, you really see the intersection of central banks, particularly in this rising interest rate environment, and how that impacts economies around the world. You see the way the banks work with the governments around issues of cyber and other things. And so it's all new, important learnings. When I think about service on Northrop Grumman's board, so much of what we do is classified, I can't talk about. But it is gratifying to see the honor, if you will, of the men and women that serve in our military and how they rely on the great companies in the aerospace and defense sector. In the genetic space, I'm constantly learning. And so it's really something that is part of staying fresh. And so it's something I really am pleased to do.
Well, you know, John Maxwell says, when you stop growing, you die.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, we've got to continue to grow, right? And to your point, to stay fresh. So, you know, it would be so easy. You retired 9 years ago. I know you love to golf. I'm sure you get plenty of golf in. But truly, I mean, Jim, you could sit back and just take it easy. You could sit on a beach somewhere. I mean, you don't have to do all of the things that you're doing to give back. At your core, that's not who you are, though. You want to make a difference. But how do you personally stay motivated and energized?
At the end of the day, do I play golf? Yes. But the way I like to say it is I play golf every time I have to, because I'm frankly better at working than I am at golf. And so I think I get more enjoyment out of my board service, the for-profits and the not-for-profits, than I do golf, because I know I'm better at it. So you like to do things you're good at. So it's something that is just part of my life now.
Yeah. Well, I love it. What an inspiration. I mean, you truly are a model for how to retire well. But I know that you did something this last year that may have been just a little bit out of your comfort zone. I don't know. Maybe you do this every weekend. I have no idea.
I know where this is going.
So I have to ask you, how was participating in Dancing with the St. Louis Stars?
Probably the best way I could say this is, throughout my career, most people thought I lived a stressful career. I never felt stress. This was the most stressful thing I think I've ever done, was having to learn how to dance again. I mean, I danced when I was 12 and 13 and 14 or whatever in middle school. And when I was being taught, okay, here's what you have to do, I thought, okay, let's do it. And so, look, the Independence Center, as you know, it's a great organization that supports adults with mental illnesses. And some friends had taken me to the event a few years ago. And then I got double teamed, and they both sent me an email asking me to dance this year. True story, I was actually on a board Zoom call when that email came in. My assistant, Lorianne, sees that email, replies to the two senators because she knew one of them very well, and says, "This is not Jim replying, this is Lorianne. And I know I have no vote in this, but I say yes." And on that reply, she copies in my wife. And so then Lynn sees it. I'm still on the Zoom call. I haven't seen the email yet. Lynn sees it. And then she replies to all and says, "I vote yes too." And so I was outvoted 2-1 before I ever saw the email. And so I had no choice. I had to dance.
That's hilarious, Jim. I love that. What a great story. Well, let me ask you this. Are you and Lynn still dancing?
No. I danced with my pro, and that was a one and done. But it was good. No one got hurt, so it was good.
Nobody got hurt. Well, and the funny thing about it is, Jim, you're dancing with your pro. You're learning to dance, but then you have to go dance in front of 600 people.
Well, and the worst is then it's on the internet forever. So,
exactly.
You know, what can you say?
You're never going to be able to get away from it. Well, you've already said, you know, you think you're better at serving on the boards and working. But how important is it, Jim, to sometimes stretch ourselves out of our comfort zone?
Look, I think it's huge. It's hugely important to do that. It's the only way you keep growing. You know, we talked earlier about the importance of getting people in jobs that they can succeed in, but that doesn't mean get comfortable in. They've got to keep challenging themselves and improving and developing new skills. And so this is a new skill I developed, but not a skill I intend to use very often with my dancing.
That's awesome. But you know what? I do believe, I always say that it takes courage to get out of your comfort zone. But the next time you go to do something uncomfortable, you can remember back. You know, if you get asked in 2 years to go and sing, you know, you can pull that back and go, well, I didn't die. I did that other thing.
Singing, let me just say, Lisa, singing would have been more in my comfort zone because I used to have to sing karaoke in Japan and Korea more than you can imagine. So,
oh my goodness.
If you do that enough, you know, you have to have a go-to song, you know, so everyone's got to have their own go-to song.
What's your go-to song, Jim?
Mac the Knife.
Oh, and so, okay. Greg and myself and you and Lynn, we need to go to a karaoke bar some night because, yeah, that would be a lot of fun. Well, there's a lot of people that say success is X, Y, and Z. For you, what's your definition of success?
Right now, success is having three beautiful grandbabies. But look, it's family, it's health, it's all the above. But just being so blessed, lucky in a career. My wife and I have been married for well over 40 years and have a fabulous family and grandkids, and my mom's still doing well and so very lucky. That's success.
It's all of those things. It's not about position. It's not about how much wealth you can accumulate. It's really making an impact. You know, success is really about impacting people. I mean, it really kind of, it comes down to whether you're the leader of an organization or you're on a board, it's about impact of people. So let me ask you this, you know, this is called something extra. You know, this is the question I ask every guest, but what do you believe, Jim, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Years ago, I was asked by the editor of Leaders Magazine to talk about what characteristics I've seen in the leaders that I've come in contact with. And every leader I've seen, the men and women had deep integrity. That was a bedrock. The respect was important, and not a positional respect because they were the leader, but reciprocal. So they respected the people that they worked with, and that respect was reciprocated. And they all realized they're part of a team. We've all known too many people that wear on their sleeve, and it's about them. Nobody likes those people. And so if I think about those characteristics, what to me might be the something extra is, I guess, what I would call relatability. Being able to be just as comfortable with people above you in the organization as you are with people below you or your peers. Being just as engaged with the receptionist or the mail clerk as you are with the CEO. Being just as comfortable in a pair of shorts or a casual shirt as you are in a tuxedo. Being comfortable with differences of all type, gender, race, ethnicity, LGBT, physical abilities, that relatability might be something extra.
I love that. That's beautiful. I don't think anybody's ever said that, Jim. So that's a first. And we've done almost 200 episodes. So that's beautiful. Well, what are you excited about right now? Is there anything coming up? I know you're not dancing with the St. Louis Stars. But what are you excited about? Is there any way that our listeners can get involved?
I'm just excited to be still vertical. I'm excited to be heading back up to Chicago pretty soon to see my grandkids again. We're so gratified with the community support that we completed the Muni campaign, but continue to support great organizations like the Muni. I'm very active in the Boy Scouts of America. There's so many wonderful organizations that need the support of all of us. And so please be generous and get involved and support in any way we can.
I mean, if all of us would do a little bit, our community is going to be a much better place to live. So thank you so much. I cannot even tell you how grateful I am for you making the time. And please give your lovely wife a big hug from me and hope to see you face to face soon.
Thanks so much. Good talk with you, Lisa. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.